from the combined crew of blindandroidusers.com and accessibleandroid.com, it's time for your favorite Android podcast. Kick back now and enjoy another fine episode from these fanboys and gals as they navigate Android from a blindness perspective. And now, here's your crew.
Hello and welcome to episode 176 of the Blind Android Users Podcast. I'm Ed Green and I'm joined today by my co-hosts Warren Carr, Austin Pinto, John Dyer, Kareen Kuan and Sally Kunders, and we're coming to you on Saturday, April the 20th, 2024. In this week's episode, we have a double spotlight section for you. Firstly, we hear from Annette and Henry from a gaming platform called AudioCat, which will bring games to you on your Android phone as well as other platforms. And we have a review from Milosh, where he shows us the Google Nest Hub 2nd Gen. And we have a tip of the week from Warren, where he shows us how to enable dark mode on Google Chrome. Well, how are we all this week? Sally, we didn't see you last week. Are you well?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I was away for last week. Everything is good over here. The work is kind of tough, but I'm glad I've got a weekend. And it was kind of sad on the Thursday night, we lost to Olympiacos for the Conference League quarterfinals. We were almost there at the semifinals, but we lost it in the penalty shootouts.
Well, what I didn't know in penalty shootouts, and Aston Villa experienced this, is that yellow cards get scrapped at the end of extra time. So, Emi Martinez, their goalkeeper, had been booked.
Yeah.
And he got another card in the shootout and wasn't sent off. I did not know that was a rule.
No, I don't think so. I was kind of confused over there, but I mean, I wasn't watching that game, so I found it out later. You know, we lost in the penalty shootout. So the Livakovic saved two penalties, but we lost three. So that's the consequence.
Yeah. That's not amazing, is it?
Yeah.
Kareen, how are you?
I'm fine, but this week had some troubles. I learned the hard lesson that it's not the time to rely on technology, because actually I lost about 7 years of memories of audio files that were on WhatsApp because of small issue when I was trying to transfer the chats. So yeah, they were really precious 7 years of memories. And also I'm locked out of my Twitter account, which is X right now, and they have a very terrible support, to say the least. So I'm officially out of Twitter and I don't want to return back, because I forgot the password and I was trying to log in, or actually to reset the password, but I wasn't receiving the message. When I contacted the support, they were like, I'm almost sure that there wasn't a human responding to me. In fact, it was just the regular questions, stupid questions, and they didn't go into the issue itself. And after that, they said, okay, we couldn't verify that you are the owner of the account, so issue closed. Where I told them several times that I wasn't able to receive the message. So how could you just verify that I'm the owner without any other like interaction? So yeah, I think that those were terrible stuff. But yeah,
the WhatsApp, I mean, I hate their backup stuff. I really don't like it, and it's really
WhatsApp
sad.
WhatsApp is terrible when it comes to backup. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I use WhatsApp, I lost, you know, stuff like that too, Karen. You know, messages that I wanted to keep from, you know, an old flame, if I could say that. And of course, I couldn't, because the backup system, you forget something, it's not working at all. It's very annoying. I don't like it.
Can I just check, though, with X, was it a text message you were receiving?
Yeah, the code
yeah.
to
yeah. So,
the password.
So that's Samsung's fault. And what you need to go and do is enable premium SMS for Samsung's messaging app. I had this when I got my first Samsung phone.
I use Google Messages. I use Google Messages.
Have you turned on premium SMS, though? Because some codes don't need premium SMS and some do. And I've only ever had this on Samsung phones.
Where is this setting?
Special app access, I think.
In Samsung messages or in these settings?
No, in settings.
You need to go and give Google Messages premium SMS access. I had this with Uber, and it's a Samsung issue because it doesn't allow SMS apps by default to have premium SMS, which I think is a bit silly. But I don't think it matters that you're using Google SMS. You need to enable it on the Samsung phone.
But the interesting thing is that the WhatsApp messages were coming. I mean, the WhatsApp verification code and the Dropbox.
Some of them did. All my bank ones came through.
Could have told me that. This should be a thing or something, but they didn't.
Yeah, no. All my banking ones came through, and the one that didn't was Uber. Weirdly, and once I turned, so some of them don't require premium SMS to be enabled. Some of them do. It sounds to me like X does. I would go turn that on and see if it works.
I'll try it. Of course, that would be a great thing.
Yeah, I'm certain that's the premium SMS Samsung setting. Okay, check it. Austin, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's the chicken is locked in a box at last, and it's recovered now. But it's been a very hot and boring week. The summer is very strong here, and I don't know when it's going to cool down. And rest all is doing good. I was at home the whole week, and should be going to work from Wednesday. So how are you, Ed?
I'm very well, thank you. It's been a good week. Poor Katiekins hasn't been so well. She has to go and get looked at, but she's well again. On the mend. So yeah, pretty good week. John Boy, what's going on in Virginia?
Well, I've actually been carrier shopping this week. I'm trying to find a new carrier. I've probably downloaded and swapped maybe 10 times my eSIM from different carriers and stuff. During our trip last week,
you're a spammer. My spammer, John.
During my trip last week, my wife has been making fun of me because I basically left our carrier that I've been with for 10 years because I got angry. I was trying to use Hotspot.
What happened? And I was give us a story, John.
I was trying to get my son's tablet on my hotspot, and it wouldn't let me turn my hotspot on. And I had not tried since I got my S24 Ultra, but I had been paying for a hotspot for, you know, years, basically. And when I try to use it, it doesn't work. And so I'm contacting support. I had to contact them like 4 or 5 times because, you know, that's what you do. And then they eventually just told me, oh, we haven't added that device to our supported hotspot devices list yet. I'm like, you're seriously telling me that my...
Why are you taking my money,
my
man?
S24 Ultra. Yeah, exactly. So I told him I'm leaving, and like within 20 minutes, I had already like signed up for a different carrier, installed the eSIM, like all in the car on the road, like driving through the mountains. You know, I had already installed and like completely like set up a whole new account and had a hotspot going, you know, within like 20 minutes. And you know, Ashley's been making fun of me, but I feel free. Like I have like so many options now. Like I can just choose like where I want to go. So I'm happy.
But aren't you paying for all of them? Or
kind of. So I am. But it's some of them are so cheap. Like there's this one US Mobile that it's like I could just pay for $10 for like 2 gigabytes of data, and I get one line for free. And then you can add a second line for another $8 to share that same data. So I have like two new phone numbers, like for $18 that I'm just like swapping back and forth.
Is nothing like that. That'd be really expensive in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think if I'm paying £10 a month, I would want at least 10 gigabytes of data.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I was paying like, and this I thought was good. Like it was like $32 a line. Like, so it was like 64 for both of us. So yeah, I'm looking, exploring cheaper options.
Now. But how much data though?
Unlimited.
Yeah. But, so that's pretty good. Our unlimited is about that, but our limited pack, our metered packages are better than your metered packages by the sounds of it. Yeah, our unlimited is about that. But
so the one I just signed up for on the spot was like $25 for a month that gave me unlimited and unlimited hotspot. The hotspot's unlimited, but they restrict it to 5 megabits per second. So you could use as much data as you want. You just can't use it any faster than that, which is fine for my use case. Like it's just my son streaming YouTube. Yeah. So I was like, okay, for $25, I'm just doing this right now. And
which one is that, John?
Visible. So they use Verizon Network.
That's right. Yeah. Visible. Actually, I think even the Visible Plus this week, they brought it down to 35. You know, if you want to buy upfront, you know, instead of whatever, you only pay like $2.75 or two, whatever. So I'm thinking of actually putting my daughter on it because with ATT, you know, I'm paying $300 a year and, you know, 16 gigs a month. And, you know, teenagers, they burn through data like, candy, cotton candy. So I'm thinking of getting that Visible Plus. It's just, you know, it's cheaper.
Yeah, I'm just, the regular Visible is fine for me. Like I'm getting like 150 when I do a speed test download. And they haven't seemed to like restrict me in any way. So, yeah.
And presumably, nice. If you're with Visible and you use a VPN, is that an invisibility cloak?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it turns you invisible.
Yeah, that's an invisibility cloak, isn't it?
Yeah. I love it.
And Warren, how are you?
Well, I'm doing good. It's been a very interesting week. You know, we have like national weather, you know, freezing alerts and all of that. However, so it's kind of been a very funny week, cold week, I should say. But today I think we're getting, you know, better. So I hope I get done editing on time so I could go out there and have some fun. But other than that, I'm doing well and I'm thankful to be here.
Yeah, and likewise.
And now, the announcement segment. This is a segment dedicated to things we want you to be in the know. And now for this week's episode, here's your announcements.
Turn then to our announcement section. And Austin, we want to remind people about the app Bonanza, don't we?
Yeah, the app Bonanza is coming up next week. So just a week left for you to submit your recorded app demos to contact us at blindandroidusers.com. And we will then take it out, the app Bonanza, depending on the recording. And it should be between 15 to 20 minutes long. And also, Google has done some very nice thing. They have merged the software and hardware division to give us good products, mostly AI-based. So, Warren, you can talk about that.
So, if you ask me, I think this is probably the biggest thing that Google had ever done. And, you know, I mean, that's just a bold move on Pichai's end by doing that because... frankly, I think this is even bigger than Google I/O, and I am surprised they didn't even hold it off till Google I/O to announce it, but went out and announced it on this past Thursday. So the merging of the software and hardware and then, you know, AI in the center, it is really nice to see that happening, because we will now have a better things talking to each other. We've talked about hardware and all of that. And we saw that move back in 2021, where Google took on a different route of doing hardware with the Pixel 6. And I'm excited about the merger. So we're actually going to be having a better support of, you know, both software and hardware. So this is something that our friends on the other aisle always boast about, because, you know, you have it at the core, you know, the software and hardware talking to each other. And so I'm glad to see that happening.
I'm not quite as optimistic as you. I mean, I hope this improves things, but I kind of just see it as a shift, you know, to like making AI their main goal. And I don't know if it's a thing they're doing just for shareholders or if they're really serious about it. And I don't doubt that it will, you know, help with the implementation of AI on these devices, but I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, because to me, though, for example, one thing that I find to be very annoying is this. For example, if my mobile data is off and I say turn on mobile data, and because the mobile data is off, it will say I can do that because I don't have mobile data. And well, that's why I'm asking you to turn it on. And so I think that if we have hardware and software people working together, some of these idiotic things shouldn't be there, which is very simplistic. And of course, hey, shut down my phone or whatever. These are very, you know, simplistic things that should be done. And for me, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they're going to do, because we're probably going to have better AI on the phone without necessarily needing internet access. And I think that's probably the biggest thing here.
Well, I think what should happen is, you know, space constraints will be a thing, but, you know, what can be done on the device should be done on the device, shouldn't it? So, you know, as much offline things should happen as can, and it should only go online when it needs to. Like you say, with your, you know, turn on mobile later, if the LLM is on the device, the large language model, then it should turn it on.
Yeah, that's my biggest complaint with, well, I have a lot of complaints with Gemini right now, but the thing I don't like about it the most probably is the fact that it goes to the cloud for literally everything, and it takes so long. It takes so long.
Don't even talk about Gemini, John. I mean, because simple things that one was done, you know, can be done. And so, I mean, I'm bumbling along with it, but I think it was last night I switched back to the assistant and, oh, you know,
it's a breath of fresh air, right?
But Gemini, exactly. Yeah, Gemini is slow. I don't think it's a cloud thing, because if I have Assistant enabled and I say play something on Spotify, the whole thing is quick. Like if the cloud was slow, you'd think either Gemini, Assistant communicating with Spotify would be slow, or me communicating with Assistant would be slow, or something. But it isn't, and like something's going online somewhere. So it can't be exclusively a going online thing. It's just Gemini is slow.
Yeah, so I hope we have a better Gemini.
Welcome to the Spotlight segment. This is a segment dedicated to interviews of developers or interesting happenings in the world of Android. And now for this episode, here's your spotlight.
And in the first of our spotlight items this week, I'm delighted to say we are joined by the developers of a new gaming platform out of Estonia called AudioCat. I know lots of you are gamers, and this is probably an underserved area of our podcast because none of us are massive gamers, I don't think. So I'm delighted to say that Annette and Henry are here to tell us about their very exciting new platform. Annette, can I hand over to you and you tell us about what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. Well, at AudioGet, we like to say that we are developing a fully accessible audio game platform. People right now in Estonia, at least, like to call us Spotify for games or even audio-based Roblox. Because right now, indeed, we are just developing the platform and also some games on it. But next year we have this kind of big plan that we will develop a framework, that meaning the community itself will develop the games and we will just keep the platform in order and do no longer a game development. So it's going to be a full-on platform and in the end also like development platform for the community.
And what made you get into this? What made you decide to start doing this?
Actually, it was, I think, 2020 when we started our game development journey. We were both studying to be software engineers and we started just, let's say, normal game development. And in 2022, just in the beginning, we had the DDX event at our town, in our city. And there one woman called Pira Taus, who is like the one of the greatest activists of accessibility in Estonia. She has made our big song festival and dance festival accessible to the blind community and deaf community. And she gave a speech there about accessibility. And I was literally so inspired that later I just went up to her. I said, sorry, I have a question. How do blind people play? And just there we started the conversation. I got the contact with like Estonian Blind Union president Jakob Rosin, and we started the conversation. And like they say, rest is kind of a history for us.
Excellent. So I know that you are kind of in a pre-launch phase, aren't you? And folks can sign up. Can you tell us a little bit about the platform when it launched? If I log on to it, what will I see on the platform? What does it look and feel like?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now we are indeed in the pre-sale phase, and we are launching in May. We really want to launch in 1st of May, like we promised, but Apple is sadly giving us a very, very hard time. And that means that we most likely need to postpone a little bit the launch because we can't launch on Apple since we don't have the permission still. But basically, when you open the application, you will be welcomed to the application. Then you can create the account manually or use your Google account to just log in. And then you will be greeted by your very own personal virtual companion. Right now, it is a cat and it has a backstory that it's from outer space and it's here to spread happiness. But and with that companion, you can chat, you can feed it, and in the end, you can buy every sort of accessories from in-game store and also like in the end change, like it doesn't have to be a cat anymore. I know that community has asked for werewolves and unicorns and swans and whatnot, so it can get quite crazy in the end. And with that same companion, you can go in like to the audio games adventures. Right now we are launching with at least two. One is Wordy. It's like a word game, like in Estonia we like to call it Alias. Basically, you have given an explanation and you need to guess the word. We thought it's gonna be quite easy game, but we have seen that it can be quite difficult. And the second one is called Echoes of Valor, which is more of a mix of a platformer and RPG. It has elements from both, and it's kind of like adventurous game where you have the battle moments and then you have like some scrying and like the main story is, for example, 25 levels. And after that, you can play indefinite, but like we don't know at what point the game gets unbeatable. That's a mystery that the players need to discover, basically.
And what's the companion doing in something like Echoes of Valor? Like, who's playing the game? Is the companion kind of the figure you're moving around on the screen, or what's that about?
The companion is the main character, basically, on all of our games, in the beginning at least. And in Echoes of Valor also, the companion just goes to this adventure, and you need to guide your companion either like to like actually do the scrying, which is an audio cue-based game. Like, you need to match the audio sequence, or you need to jump over obstacles. There's different, like, certain types of difficulty jumping. It's not only just like jump and that's done. There's different interactions. And then there is turn-based battle where your companion meets an enemy, and then you have a choice, basically. Do you run away and like try to escape, or do you go full on into combat and pray for your best that you win?
Yeah, so it's more than Avatar, is it? It sounds like it's got slightly more of a life of its own than an Avatar might have.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. And Henry, are you a developer as well? How did you get involved in this?
So, yes, I'm a developer as well. And I got involved with this basically because me and Donetta live together. We're roommates. And we've been on this fun journey the whole time together.
Excellent. And what, if you can tell us, what games might you have planned in the future? You've got your word game, sort of sounds like a crossword without the grid from what you're saying. And you've got Echoes of Valor. What might be in the pipeline?
Well, we actually really want to launch with three games, but since, like, yeah, like I said, Apple is giving us a hard time and we're focusing all on energy on that right now, then the third game will be launched with an update. It's going to be like a retro game vibe a little bit. And it's basically a take on the, let's say, amazing retro game called Frogger, where, like, you need to jump over the street where the cars are coming with a frog, but we're gonna do it like more of a companion style, and maybe add a little bit more difficulty to it. And then there's also, like, for myself, since me and Henry are quite big gamers, Henry likes more building games, I like more of like adventure open world games. I love open world games, so they are also like in the pipeline. I want something like with an open world, and Henry wants something more like building and like creating, like maybe Sims based something, because Henry is a big Sims fan. So something like that. And I have to add that next year we have a really amazing partnership coming in Estonia. Here is one very cool company called Seven Sense. They're basically right now developing this kind of device, which is a haptic device, and that basically will help blind people see. I have tried that device on myself, and basically you can feel people moving like different speed in the room, and you can feel the objects, and like you can even catch things while they're flying, basically. It's amazing. And we talked about the partnership in possibility to doing like Oculus for the blind people. So like right now we have this Oculus that like is all visual, and I even can't play it because I have very bad motion sickness, but you basically put that on your head and you can play games. And we had a like cool idea that you can do like Call of Duty or something, like shooting game even. So like very, very cool projects coming next year also.
That sounds really good. I mean, from my perspective, as someone who doesn't play a lot of games, although Blind Drive is amazing, I've just got to say, mm-hmm. No one's played that. You should play Blind Drive. But that aside, where I think the blindness market, I was going to say underserved, but I won't. I'll be more radical than that. Not served at all is in any sorts of sports simulation games. So there's no football or soccer game for the blind. There's no golf game. No any sort of sports whatsoever. No one does that. Apart from a guy who made some games with DOS in about 1990 and kind of ported them to Windows. There's literally nothing. Whereas there probably are fantasy RPGs, other ones. So I don't know, but whether that's an interesting, well, not niche market, but gap in the market you might consider exploring.
Yeah, that is actually, I have been written personally and asked about a football game. I have played like way back in the day, I played a lot of on like PS4, PS3, I think, even I played FIFA and games like that and Football Manager. So I think it would be quite fun challenge to design something like that, just audio based. And yeah, so this would be a challenge for me, definitely. And I think that would take like some weeks for me to design because I just don't want it to be something random. I want it like to be something cool and little bit, yeah, a lot like just so easy, you know, because most of the games that I have played like in audio based, I feel they're kind of like easy. And like also some community members have said to me, it's like, it feels like the developers think that the blind people are dumb, you know? And I kind of have to agree with some points because, like, I have seen blind people using their, like, technological devices and they're pretty good, you know? They're good than most of the sighted people I know. So I wouldn't do the games just, like, just so easy. I would add some difficulty so they're actually, like, enjoyable, you know, because the difficulty in some sense brings the like the enjoyment and fun into it.
Yeah, for sure. But like, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure you'll do it amazingly well and better than anyone who's done it before. But there, you know, there are word games. There are fantasy RPG games. They exist. Yeah. Whereas sport games, they literally don't. There isn't one. So it might be a gap in the market to exploit if that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's something definitely, yeah, because we have a little bit of a gap in June, basically, because we haven't put there anything to, like, be developed. So since I have gotten quite many requests, like, to a football game, so I think that's something I'm willing to explore and try, since I am a big football fan and have been for a very long time, since my grandma taught me all the rules and stuff like that. So I think that would be something I would be willing to try indeed, yeah.
Excellent. That'd be really good.
Well, Ed, I think you've asked all the great questions that I was thinking of. Now, but I do want to ask one question. Now, is this going to be like a multi-platform, or is it something that I access via a browser, or is it something that, say, if I'm on Android, I have an Android app, or, you know, Windows, I have a Windows app, or is it something that will be accessed via the browser?
So currently, yeah, we're developing for Android and Apple, the platforms. However, we do see a potential in the future to have also something for the PC, because what we're doing is making a platform where we can get different games together and that can be enjoyed by people with wide ranges of games they're interested in.
Excellent. I'm glad, though, that you guys have Android on there, because that's my concern. No, I know I'm not a gamer, just like Ed says. Not a lot of us on here are gamers. But there was one game that I used to like, and I wish that people could give you the license to it. That thing was called Audio Archery. I don't know. It would be nice to see you guys incorporate that or integrate that into your platform, because that has been the one game that I'd ever played on Android, and I would love to be able to play that game again. Just absolutely beautiful.
That would be literally dead simple. It would take you about a minute and a half to recreate if you wanted to. It was fun. It was not complicated, though. I'm sure you could almost write that as we were interviewing you. Audio Archery, but it was good fun. So if you did want to bring that to your repertoire, I don't think it would take you very long.
Yeah, that's actually a good suggestion. We're taking all the suggestions in and basically writing everything down, and seeing as we go, because right now, yes, we are also, of course, bringing it also to Android. And as we have seen, Android is much easier to develop than Apple. Apple has so many restraints and like everything like causing trouble. Android is so much easier and so much simpler, basically. So, but the game suggestion, yeah, that's amazing. We need to research that, and why not?
Yeah.
And while you're at it, Annette, also bring us a bowling game. You know, that would be nice. That's one of the things I like to do. You go bowling, you know.
Okay. That's actually, yeah, that's a good idea. I haven't played the bowling. No, I have played bowling game on Wii, though. Yeah, I have, long time ago. Yeah.
So there was an iOS game for this, and they didn't do very well. It was called the Blindfold Games. They did a blindfold bowling game, except the problem they had, they had a randomizer as to which skittles went down. So they lined you up where you bowled the ball, and let's say you threw it down the left-hand channel. They would say that skittles are like pins 1, 9, and 10 went down, which obviously wouldn't actually happen if you were bowling. Like, it couldn't. It can't hit the one on the left and then the two on the right go down. So if you do that, just make sure it's realistic in terms of which pins go. But blindfold bowling, if you want to have a look at what's already out there, would be one. I think they fixed that, actually. People complained that it was a bit odd.
Okay.
That's only on iOS, as far as I know, though. I don't believe it is on Android.
Okay.
It was in my pre-Android days that I played that.
So I take it, Ed, that you don't consider bowling a sport, because you said this has been not only underserved but not served. So
it's not a sport.
That means you don't consider it a sport.
It's
okay.
Not a sport. No.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's a pub game.
You think it's not a sport?
No, it's a bar game.
I think bowlers would disagree with you, but I do agree.
I don't care. I'll go and talk to all the bowlers, and I'll bring a glass bottle with me, and I'll smash it and take them.
Here's what happened. And ladies, forgive me, but I used to think that, hey, you know, bowling is for, you know, women and stuff like that. And then, you know, my wife took me and I fell in love with the damn thing. Excuse my Espanol.
Yeah. It's not a sport, though. It just isn't.
Yeah.
But golf is.
Yeah, golf's a sport.
Okay.
So what will be the price model of the platform? Will it be free or any paid price model?
The price model. Basically, right now we're doing a pre-sale when people can buy basically in like a discounted rate, a three-month access. But it's going to be subscription-based since we are adding new games every month. And in the end also, like, when the community starts developing, it's going to be every month new games and even more after each month. So to also like basically make the AudioCat live like for its own money, because right now we're just paying every bill for out of our own pocket. So it's going to be subscription based. It's €7.99. I don't know if like dollars or other currencies, I don't know the price, but like, since we calculate everything in euros, it's €7.99, and every other calculation usually the computer does for us.
And that's $7.99 a month, a quarter, what's that?
This is monthly rate, yeah. But we have like offers like also quarterly and 6 months and 12 months, which is going like basically 15% cheaper or so on. So if people want longer time access for a cheaper price. So it's also an option, but yes, €7.99 a month euros.
You mentioned earlier that that Apple was giving you a hard time in the App Store. Mm-hmm. Does that mean it's coming to Android first? you're not making Android people wait, are you?
It seems so that it's coming to Android first, yeah, and Apple people need to wait a little longer. We don't want to like basically punish the Android people because Apple is not working with us. So it seems so that it's coming to Android first, and Apple people just need to wait a little bit until we get some sort of answer from them.
All right. Sounds good.
That was the right answer, Aletta.
Yeah.
Well, you know where you are.
Exactly. Android folks getting punished because I call them the fruit veilers. You know, I don't want us getting punished because fruit veil is not allowing you to get in that veil. So please don't delay Android on grounds of this.
Yeah. They actually really need to go to Apple office and give them a smack on the head that get to work, because there's so much developers who want to develop. And Apple is taking away the opportunity to develop because they refuse to answer within the time frame they promise. And that has been the main drawback. We are spamming them to get an answer.
Yeah, basically, they wrote us basically three weeks ago that we are going to contact you soon. The soon is still, I don't know when is the soon. And then they keep spamming all of the email accounts we find every day with new letters and new emails, and it's still soon. So we're waiting the soon to happen.
Yeah, it's like tomorrow, isn't it? You never get tomorrow.
Yeah, basically. And Apple is very complicated. And I have read a lot of posts that developers say that if Steve Jobs wasn't dead already, they would kill him personally. So people are very angry. Developers are really angry at Apple.
How inconsiderate that he died before people could kill him. Warren, I think you had a question before John.
Yes, I do. And frankly, so I was thinking about this AudioCat network, and I'm like, it's got to be a girl that would come up with something relating to the cat, because I'm looking at my little girl. She's so much into cats. And I don't think Henry would have chosen Audio Cat. Annette, did you choose that name or that title? I'm just kind of curious.
Actually, it was more Henry, because the game we were developing before was called Leo, after my cat, Leonardo, who's called Leo. And I don't like to call him much that, because he's not being officially diagnosed, but I am kind of afraid that he is a little bit visually impaired, because he bumps into everything all the time and falls down places, and he's not like the best with his vision. And we thought that, wait, but Leo has a very good hearing, like very good hearing. He hears all the time when I call him. So we thought like audio and cat, because Leo has like trouble seeing, but his hearing is like awesome. So I was like, audio cat, that must suit. And I think in the end Henry was that who generate the name, because I was like, I can't think of a name. I literally can't think of a name, because I'm gonna be stuck with the name forever. So I can't choose something and be like, okay, that's forever thing.
The actual story is that what happened was, we were sitting behind the computer. In Estonia, you can make a business like very simple through the internet. And we were sitting at the name box for like an hour and just thinking. And yeah, that's like, it was kind of a team effort in a way, because we were like, okay, AudioCat sounds like it. And it also ended up working out well, because we're now partnering with our friends who have a dog company. So cats and dogs are friends now. And it's kind of like a collaboration brand in a way.
Yeah, we are partnering with a company called Movemates, who are working basically Tinder for dogs, like for friendship purposes, of course. So now we agreed that cats and dogs are friends. So like we are the cat ones and he is the dog one. So it worked out perfectly in the end.
That's great.
I like the story. It's a beautiful story. And it's interesting, though, that some animal may have some vision problem, but then they, of course, use the other sense, the hearing, and that's absolutely beautiful. So I can see why this thing should be called the Audio Cat. That's absolutely beautiful.
So I want to know, how do people can keep contact with you? How they can reach out to you if they have any suggestions? Because the community are full of ideas, full of game ideas, and how they can reach out to you.
Well, basically, yeah, Henry put also the email there, which people can use. And we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have LinkedIn, if somebody uses that. So from there, people can reach out. And also, like, if they basically subscribe to our wait list, which is on our website, and you can also tag that. So then there's also, we send out basically our emails with every update or newsletter, so people can easily take contact with us. And we are quite available. I would say Henry is not mostly available because he doesn't check his messages never. It's very hard. it's even very hard for me to get into contact with him. But I check at least 3 times an hour. I check my email and I check my social media accounts because I know that somebody wants to reach me from somewhere. So I am quite available and ready to answer most days.
Yeah, you were pretty quick when we were messaging about you appearing on here. You're pretty responsive. And you just won a business award, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we went on 16th of April. Actually, it's a busy week. Just yesterday, we got back from Riga. It was a big startup event called TechChill. But before that, in Tallinn, there was a Melt Innovation Forum, where there was a competition, Creative Business Cup Estonia Finals, and we won. That means 2nd to 3rd of June, there is Creative Business Cup Global in Copenhagen with 80-plus countries competing, and we are representing Estonia with AudioCat.
Brilliant. Congratulations. That's absolutely beautiful. And, you know, like, people can just go to audiocat.com, right? So sign up for the waiting list out there.
It's actually AudioCat app. Andrew put it also in chat. It's audiocatapp.com.
Okay.
So people can, yeah, sign up. And we send out newsletters or update letters, as I like to call them, basically twice a week. But starting May, one very amazing guy who is also the founder of the World is Accessible Facebook group in Facebook, Anthony, is taking over our newsletter and our most of the social media. He's like very big on all the accessibility topics, and like he's been amazing. And now he's a little bit helping us because I am kind of running out of time with everything, so I'm trying to still be available, but he's taking a little bit of work off me. But he's absolutely amazing and always responding also, and if he needs anything, he's asking me, and like everything is in cooperation and everything is fine.
That's really good. And for you guys, is this all you do, or do you have like other projects that you're doing in your mainstream software development lives? How does AudioCat fit for you?
Well, for me, AudioCat is full time because, like my aunt, some years ago said to me, excuse my language, but I'm very shit worker or employee. I can't handle the clock. Going at 7 and finishing at 5, I can't handle that. I need to be my own boss. I need to work for myself. I work best then. I work most productive. And I can't handle basically taking orders because I will find a mistake and I'm going to say the mistake straightforward to the person. And usually my bosses have liked my straightforward approach so far. So I am better off with AudioCat, but Henry is not full-time AudioCat, he can say.
I work a full-time job, and then I'm part-time AudioCat. And me and Anita are also parents to our children.
Yeah, we have, we have Leonardo, our cat, and we also have a dog who... she's very, looking at me and waiting, can we go outside, please? So yeah, she's trying to charm me right now to go outside to a last walk of the day.
I'm also very good at gardening. I overwater my plants.
Excellent.
Yeah, Henry killed a cactus.
That's my proudest achievement in life.
Yeah, you're not supposed to water that. You're supposed to kind of leave it. Oh dear.
It's a typical desert plant, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere in Arizona or someplace like that.
You gave it too much beer and it fell over and its liver fails.
Yes.
Well, guys, thank you so much. We really appreciate you guys for coming out, and you know, for Ed reaching out to you guys and you guys accepting to come out and talk to us. We've been thrilled, and I'm looking forward to seeing some games, especially, you know, that bowling game and the audio archery or something similar, that you guys could bring me back to gaming again.
Yeah, I actually wrote them down, so we're going to try. I'm going to research all of this tomorrow, since today I'm just trying to rest from all of this traveling that we did for 4 days. So yeah, Tomorrow it's full on back work, and then I can see what we can do.
So tell me something, guys, before you guys leave. Would you be willing to come back again sometime down the road, especially when you finally launch this and, you know, somewhere down the road, sometime this year, would you be willing to come back again and talk about some of the things that have changed or some of the things you're working on?
Yeah, just somebody shoot us a message and I will answer, because Henry will probably most likely even see it, but I will answer. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Ed and Henry. We appreciate you guys for responding to Ed and coming on to chat with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. It's nice meeting you guys.
Bye, guys.
You're listening to the Blind Android Users podcast.
Welcome to the Spotlight segment. This is a segment dedicated to interviews of developers or interesting happenings in the world of Android. And now for this episode, here's your Spotlight.
And in the second part of our Spotlight section, Miwash brings us a demonstration of the Google Nest Hub 2nd Gen.
Hello everyone, this is your favorite potato who likes peaches. Today I'm gonna talk about Google Nest Hub 2nd generation, which is a smart display from Google. I'm not gonna do the unboxing because I wanted to use this thing for some time and share my impressions. So, starting from the box. It's kinda big and rectangular. It has that foil on it, which you have to break to open it, and you open it like you would open the phone box. So the upper side comes off, and inside we have our Nest Hub, and under it we have a small box in which we find the power adapter and some manuals. So, starting from the specs, height is 120.4 millimeters, width 177.4 millimeters, and depth 69.5 millimeters. The power cable is 1.5 meters long, and the device weighs 558 grams, so it's pretty heavy. The device has 1024x600 resolution 7-inch touchscreen and a full-range speaker with 43.5 millimeter driver. It also has 3 far-field microphones and a mic-off switch for privacy. It has a voice assistant built-in with voice match technology and ultrasound sensing. From sensors, we have a Soli sensor for motion sense, ambient EQ light sensor, and a temperature sensor. From ports, we have a DC power jack, and sadly that's all, so we don't have a 3.5 millimeter input or output. We have a 15 watts power adapter included, and if someone saw the adapter for the Nest Mini, for example, it's exactly the same adapter. From connectivities, we have a dual band Wi-Fi, Bluetooth 5.0, and Chromecast. Now let me describe this device, which will be pretty hard for me because it simply looks weird. we have this base which is covered with fabrics, and on the front it looks like there is a tablet glued into it. So on the back, in the middle, we have a metal Google logo. On the left, near the bottom, we have a hole in which we plug the DC power adapter. The bottom is made out of rubber, so the device doesn't move. And on the back, on the top of that tablet thing, we have a mute switch. If we switch it to the left, the mic is off, and if we switch it to the right, the mic is on. On the right side of that tablet, also on the back, we have a volume rocker. So it's volume up and volume down. If we hold them together for a few seconds, then the device will be reset to factory default settings. The front is, of course, the multi-touch display. And on the top, there are two small holes for the far-field microphones. The device is turned on, so let me talk about my impressions, because not everything is as I've expected it. First thing is that this device runs on Fuchsia OS, which is the Google's operating system for smart displays and other Nest devices. They basically replaced the Android with it on those devices, which means we can't really do anything here. It's a closed down system. So the obvious thing that I like about this is that I can watch YouTube videos on it. So I can just cast a video. It also works with Disney Plus, Netflix, and other streaming services. Of course, not Amazon Prime Video. So, the screen reader. First time setup. When I've got the device, I was kinda lost. First, I tried to hold both volume buttons because I thought I can turn on the screen reader just like TalkBack on Android. But then I realized that holding both volume buttons resets it to factory default settings. So I had to connect this thing somehow, and there started my problems, because with Nest Mini, when I opened Google Home app, it detected it easily and asked me to set it up. But with this display, I had to scan a QR code to set it up, and then it worked. But I had to manually choose it from the list and scan the code. So I set everything up in the Google Home app, and I went to the accessibility settings. And there is my first disappointment. The screen reader is just a toggle. There is no options for it. No speed, no volume, no usage hints, nothing. We can't change anything. We have to have everything as Google set up. So we'll hear double tap to activate. And for some, the TTS speed will be too slow, for example, for me, and too loud, because even on low volumes, at night, sometimes I accidentally touched the screen when I was doing something, and I had the volume set to minimum, but it was pretty loud. Let me show it. 0% media volume. This is 0%, and it sounds pretty quiet, right? But at night, when everyone is sleeping, it's really loud. So I was scared I would wake someone up at home. So yeah, this is one of those things. The other thing that you probably noticed already is this.
30% media volume, 40% media volume.
If you change the volume, it tells you the volume level. When the music is playing, it just ducks the audio, which is really annoying. And of course, you can't do anything about it because there are no screen reader settings. Another thing is that you can't change the voice. So if you had set it up with the English language, by the way, you don't have a choice when setting it up. You can't set the language. It kinda uses your Google Home language, or I don't really know how it determines which language to use. But basically, if you set it up with a certain language, then to use another language, you need to reset it. So hold those two volume buttons.
You're about to completely reset this device. Release to cancel.
Yeah, basically you hold it for longer. I won't do that. And you would need to change something in the Google Home. I don't remember what exactly, but yeah, this is insane. You can't even change the language of the device. And you are stuck with this default US English voice, even if your Google Assistant has another voice. So yeah, you have to
close quick settings.
Use
double tap to activate
this voice. And yeah, as you could hear, it said double tap to activate, and you also can't do anything about it. So the screen reader is really bare bones. You can of course swipe left and right to explore.
Mute media volume button, 40% media volume slider.
You can also explore the screen by just swiping close your finger around.
Double tap to activate.
Or touching the screen. You can also double tap, of course, to activate something. You can swipe up and down.
Default. Default. Default.
Yeah, there is only default. Only when you have a slider.
Mute media volume. 40% media volume. Slider.
Yeah, we have a slider.
Adjust value.
Yeah, then we have adjust value,
default,
and default. And this is the only usage for that up and down swipe. Really, there is no navigation by characters, words, paragraphs, and whatever. We can open quick settings by swiping up with three fingers.
Open quick settings, Pandora button, double tap.
And here we have close different services. We can close
weather button.
We have weather, YouTube
search
button,
Sling TV,
Spotify,
see all, brightness.
Yeah, button. We have brightness, double
volume, button. Do not disturb button,
do not disturb,
switch off, double alarms button,
alarms, feedback,
system
button. Settings,
last.
Yeah, last. So this is the last item.
Volume, brightness.
So I will show you.
Double tap to activate.
If we click on see all, yeah, there are no sounds, no anything to confirm that you double clicked or anything.
First.
You just need to, yeah.
Weather.
YouTube. So we have search. All of those.
Sling TV, but Spotify, button, double tapped assistant, broadcast, calendar, contacts, Duo, Netflix, news. Pandora, podcasts, reminders, search, shopping list, Sling TV, Spotify, stories, timer, weather, YT music, YT TV, YouTube, last.
And yeah, you could say, oh yay, cool, we have some nice applications which we can use. No, not really. Those are basically Google Assistant shortcuts. So basically swiping right with three fingers is like back. And this is relevant now because I want to show you something. For example, what happens if you click on YouTube?
YT YouTube, but
sure, here's YouTube.
Last, first, recommended, YouTube premium logo, first, YouTube on TV. Chill vibes songs, positive morning four leaf, chill vibes, morning vibes four leaf, chill vibes song, positive morning morning mood sunflower come, chill songs to make you, chill songs when you, positive vibes music.
Yeah, we can't clover, really.
Chill morning, delight, music that make you feel, morning coffee hot beverage.
Yeah, we have like.
Navigated back.
Yeah, I navigated back. But basically, this is just Google Assistant showing us some recommendations. We can't really search for anything. At first, I thought like you can search, like it is the app, you can search. You have a keyboard, you can type like the title you want, or at least use the voice search and browse through the results, but not really.
Navigate to home tabs.
Button. Yeah, so we open.
Open
quick settings because I want to show you one more thing.
Sling TV.
Yeah. I want to go to the
last
system settings.
System settings. Button. Double
and show you this.
System settings. Device information. Name. Wi-Fi. Button.
Yeah, we have device information. Nothing much really here.
Bluetooth.
button. We have Bluetooth. Double tap to activate. Here we can enable pairing mode or connect to any of the devices, because this display can act as a Bluetooth speaker, and also the other way, so you can connect this display to a Bluetooth speaker. If you, for example, have a nice Bluetooth speaker system, a soundbar or something, yeah, you can do that. And of course, a feature of Google Home, you can group speakers and displays together. So I grouped my Nest Mini with this display and they played together, and it was really nice. No latency or anything. That's something I really like.
Display, theme, button.
Yeah, double display. Tap to
activate. Photo frame, art gallery. Button.
Yeah, photo frame, because this device can act as a photo frame, which makes sense, yeah.
Last.
And that's basically all you get here. No accessibility, no anything. It's just so disappointing, right?
Display. Theme.
So you can go button. Here to display, theme. For example. Theme.
Set your display's appearance to light or dark, or have it automatically adjust based on the time of day and ambient light. Light. Button. Dark. Auto. Last.
Navigate and that's adapt. Really all.
Device information. Bluetooth. Button. Display. Photo frame. Art. Last.
Yeah, and photo frame.
So that I know who's asking. Say, hey Google, change photo frame. Last. So, image.
Yeah.
First.
That's all.
Navigated back.
Yeah, I navigate back.
Navigated to clock.
Another gesture we can use is tap once with two fingers, and it basically will shush the speech. So,
2020.
For example,
2020. 2020. Last. Navigate
yeah,
to photo
this
frame.
Is the clock. First. But for example,
navigate
to. Oh, yeah. See, I touched it once with two fingers and it doesn't talk anymore. It doesn't work like in TalkBack, so if you touch it again, it won't resume the speech. Another gesture is swiping down with three fingers, and that closes the quick settings.
Open quick settings.
We can swipe down with three fingers and it will close it.
Closed quick settings.
And that's the only thing this gesture does. So there are no like swipes with two fingers. No, they don't do anything. We can also swipe right and left on those home screens to move between them. So
navigated to photo frame.
We have the photo frame.
Navigated to home tabs.
Home tabs.
Assistant button. Button. Double tap to activate.
Here we can all of those.
Curated art. Double your evening. Double home control. Double media.
Yeah,
double
basically we can control our smart appliances and media here.
Navigated to photo frame.
Yeah, and there is nothing else, so we go right.
Navigated to clock.
We have the clock.
Display turned off.
And if we go far right, then the display will turn off. And if we touch it.
Turn on screen. Button. Double tap to activate.
So that's basically it. There is that Soli chip that Google was bragging about so much in the second generation of Nest Hub, because they hope you will put it in your bedroom. So there is like sleep sensing, which gives you insights on your sleep. I don't really know how that works because I haven't tried, but basically you can do it like this. Hey Google, how did I sleep last night?
It looks like you don't have any sleep data recorded for that day.
But normally it would tell you. Also, it can recognize motion gestures. Those who have the Nest Mini probably know that if you touch the top of the device, the media will pause. Here we have to wave our hand in front of a display to pause or resume the media. I wasn't able to do that. Like, it didn't work for me, even if I have that thingy turned on. So I can't really say anything about it because it didn't work for me. But maybe I'm doing something wrong. I think that's all about it. There's nothing else to say. I mean, the device would be even better if Google didn't decide to get rid of all of the actions on Google thingies, because the games for Google Assistant were actually fun. To sum this up, I love it, but I hate it at the same time. I mean, the fact that Google didn't put much effort into the screen reader for Fuchsia OS. It's just frustrating because there is a lot to improve there. And it's not like this system is very new. It started being implemented like 3 years ago, as far as I remember. But anyways, also the fact that you can't change the language and you're stuck with whatever language you have set it up in is also really frustrating, because now I would like to change to English UK because at least the voice is much better. And yeah, I would also like to disable usage hints to speed it up and turn the volume of the screen reader down so it doesn't talk when the volume is set at 0 or at 5. Or make it not read media volume when changing it, to make it stop ducking audio when screen reader is speaking, because for me it's annoying. Yeah, but speaking of that media volume thing, even if you have like the routine set up, so like you could set up the thing that, for example, when you go to sleep, the assistant will answer quieter, so that you can set the maximum volume at night so it won't go above that, and then in the morning it goes back to the previous volume. And the problem with that is that it actually tells you. So for example, I set it to turn down the maximum volume at 22, so each day at 22 I hear something like 19% media volume. And this is really annoying, to be honest. But this device also has its good sides, which is like Chromecast with video, so we can watch YouTube. We can pair it with other Nest speakers and displays. And the display is convenient sometimes. Like you can click next video, previous video. And the sound quality is very good, but just take my word for that, because I can't really play any music here. But for sure there are some sound tests on YouTube which you can listen to, and I'm sure you won't be disappointed, because this device is not that expensive, I mean compared to what it offers. That's all from me for today. I hope I helped you decide if you need something like this, and I also hope you enjoyed listening to this. Take care everyone, and have a peachy day.
Up next is the tip of the week. This is when we show you a trick or two on how to use a certain feature on your phone or within a given app. And now for this week's episode, here's your tip of the week.
And we close this week's episode with a tip of the week from Warren, where he demonstrates how to enable dark mode on Google Chrome.
Hi, Warren here for Blind Android Users Podcast, and for episode 176 tip of the week, this is enabling dark mode on Chrome. I already am sitting here in my Chrome, and what we need to do as the first tip is to tap on the top right corner that says Customize Chrome. I'll now move to that top right corner and tap on it.
Customize and control Google Chrome button.
Let's go ahead and tap.
Pop-up window. Forward button disabled in list.
Step 2, what we need to tap on is to tap on settings, which is the second to the last item above the feedback.
Settings.
Let's tap.
Settings. Navigate up button out of list.
Step 3, what we're looking for is theme, and that's found below notification.
Theme, 13 of 21.
Let's tap.
Theme, navigate up, button, out of
Step
list.
Step 4, and this is the final one. Here on this page now, we have radio buttons. The first one we have is
radio button, selected, system default, turn on dark theme when your device's dark theme or battery saver is on.
This is possible if you have Android 12 or higher, that allows you to run your system in dark mode. Now, if you have something that does not have that, then you're not going to have this. In any case, though, what we're looking for is to choose the third radio button that says dark mode. So moving down.
Radio button, not selected, light.
That's a light. And the last item.
Radio button, Not selected. Dark.
Dark. We tap.
Selected.
And that checks it. Now, whenever you go to a website, your Chrome will be in dark mode. And that's your tip of the week. All good things must end. Thus, it's curtain drawing time, bringing us to the close of this week's episode. Coming up, though, we give you information on how to get hold of us.
That's it for this week, folks. Austin, how do people get in touch with us?
To contact us, you can send an email to contactus@blindandroidusers.com. You can join our mailing list by sending an email to blindandroidusers+subscribe@groups.io. You can join our Telegram, Facebook, Discord, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. The links for everything will be at the bottom of the show notes and also in the video description of the YouTube channel. And also the links are in the websites panel of the YouTube channels.
Well, thank you very much for listening to us, everybody. That's it from us. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye. And we want to see you guys next week for App Bonanza.
Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Blind Android Users Podcast. Until we see you next week, don't forget to leave us your comments and suggestions via our email contact or using any of our social media sites. Have a great week.